The Trumpet Daily Program begins right now.
Today's world news, what it means, where it's taking us.
I bring you the one and only possible message of world peace.
This is a message of hope, tremendous hope. And he said unto me, you must prophesy again.
And now, The Trumpet Daily with Stephen Flurry.
Hello again, everyone, and welcome back to the Trumpet Daily Radio Show. A rush, rush, rush job always, but especially so when we've got to go an hour early. It's good to be with you, though. It's hard to believe we're right here at the very end of the week, the last day of broadcasting here from the Ed Stone studio this week. A fast-moving week. A theme for the week in looking at the news, cancellation. You're seeing things canceled all over the world. There's a satirical site, a website called isitcanceledyet.com. You can get the very latest what's being canceled, and they put a humorous spin on it as well. But in all seriousness, there's no March Madness. There's no Disneyland. That's been closed. The NHL... The Major League Baseball, they've all followed in the direction of the NBA. The PGA, they're putting on events without fans. Broadway shows, the place where the show must go on, that's been canceled as well. No more Broadway shows, no more live studio audiences, as I said on yesterday's program. And again, speaking of some satire, our favorite, the Babylon Bee, it had a headline this morning. Nation's nerds wake up in utopia where everyone stays inside. Sports are canceled. Social interaction forbidden. That's a humorous take on some of the dreadful news that we've been seeing through this week. The disease, of course... The disease is a real thing. It is contagious, but it certainly doesn't seem to be as lethal as pandemics in years past. But the level of panic, the level of hysteria, this is unprecedented. This is off the charts. As of last night, the CDC reported these statistics for the United States. This is for the U.S. Total number of cases, 1,215. 1,215. Now, some sites have said more like 1,600. So anywhere between, but that's the CDC. That's 1,200 to 1,500. And yet you have headlines. I don't even know how long it's been up on Drudge. The Rashida Tlaib estimate. Rashida Tlaib. 150 million, she says. And so that gets the headlines. Total deaths, according to the CDC, 36 in the United States of America. 36. 23 of those deaths were at the Life Care Center in Kirkland, Washington. That's a nursing home for the elderly. 23 in that one facility in Washington State. And outside of that, 13 others. From sea to shining sea. 13 other deaths. And it's for this. We've got travel bans. We've got cancellations all over the place. We've got an economy that's grinding to a halt. Yesterday, there was a headline, I think at the New York Post, maybe. Denmark. And Ireland joining Italy with a full lockdown for the rest of this month. Ireland has had one death that's directly linked to coronavirus. Ireland has, speaking of one death, they have one of their own every single week who dies of alcohol poisoning. That happens on a weekly basis. But now we've got the shutdown, the lockdown. They're following in the direction. They're following the example set by the U.S., Israel, some of these other nations, Italy. We don't know as much about how China's handling it, or Iran, because you can't really trust the information. But listen, as far as what the president has done, President Trump, listen to Steve Schmidt's take on the Trump administration. This is from MSNBC yesterday. Here's his advice to President Trump, clip one.
Stop lying. Start telling the truth. The American people deserve to be told the serious, full, total truth about the gravity of this situation and what to do about it. They deserve to know the facts, not nonsense, not spin.
So this is a talking head who believes that the Trump administration is downplaying the significance of the Wuhan flu. The same administration, mind you, that just put in place a ban on air travel between the United States and Europe. Coronavirus is not being downplayed or covered up. Far from it. It's exactly the opposite, in fact. It's been politicized, it's been sensationalized, like no virus in history. We've never seen anything like this. We've never seen this kind of coverage. Let me just give you an example from a month ago. This is, well, in the early stages of the Wuhan flu, or earlier, but before the hysteria of the last couple of weeks. So here's how it's covered in the U.S. News and World Report. It says, folks fretting, this is February 7th, so a little over a month, folks fretting over the coronavirus are forgetting there's another virus already running rampant in the United States, one that's killed nearly 20 times as many people in this country alone. Influenza has already taken the lives of 10,000 Americans this season. This winter, 10,000 Americans have died as a result of the flu. That's according to the CDC. It says at least 19 million have caught the flu, and an estimated 180,000 became so ill that they landed in the hospital. It says, by comparison, there are 12 confirmed cases of coronavirus in the U.S. This, again, is from February 7th. So here's how the reporting went 5-6 weeks ago. Talked about the confirmed cases in China, the number of deaths in China. And then it quotes this doctor, influenza, it says, is easier to pick up, and there are far, far more cases. It's already much larger than coronavirus has been so far in the whole world, in our own country alone. And then it says this, it's easy to forget the clear and present danger posed by influenza because it's always there, sickening millions and killing thousands every year during flu season. See, it's always there. So we're, like I covered yesterday, we're accustomed to it. We know there's risks associated with living. And of course, to this point, we just say, well, that's something that we catch. That's not really the truth, of course. It's because of our own health laws, those that we're breaking. That's the cause of sickness. That's another subject, I guess, entirely. I just want to focus, though, on the sensational coverage of this. It is having an impact on the world, but that's a bigger story than the disease itself. I'll come to that in just a bit. But it says here, the CDC predicts that at least 12,000 Americans will die from the flu in any given year. As many as 61,000 died in 2017, the flu season in 2017-18, and 45 million were infected. So every winter, it's anywhere between 12,000 and in some cases, 60,000. So that's a bit of perspective that is sadly lacking from so much of the coverage today. The last time the World Health Organization declared a pandemic was in June of 2009. That was for the swine flu. That's 11 years ago. The H1N1 virus. And the United States first detected the H1N1 virus in April of 2009. So these are the first few months of the Obama administration. And here's a clip from CBS. This is how CBS reported on this, the early stages of this outbreak back in, I think it's from April or May of 2009. This is clip 5.
You want to strike that balance where you have effective containment of the contagion without causing neither undue fear in the population nor excessive or undue disruption of social life.
It's complicated by the fact that scientists still aren't sure just how dangerous this flu is. On one hand, it has all three hallmarks of a potential pandemic: a unique virus never seen before, easily transmitted from person to person, with a demonstrated ability to kill.
It's unique. We haven't seen anything like it before. It came from Mexico, this particular one, the swine flu. But it was first detected in the United States in April of 2009. And then by June, the WHO, keep in mind what happened this week. It was the WHO on Wednesday, March 11th, that declared this a pandemic. That happened as well back in June of 2011. And then it was 3 months after that that the Obama administration really started getting busy with the vaccines and declaring a state of national emergency. But even still, like you heard from that commentator at the start of the clip, they didn't want to cause undue fear. They didn't want to worry Americans and say, well, don't go out, don't travel anywhere. It was very different, the reaction. And there's a variety of reasons for that. I'll come to that later as well, if I have time. There was a case, by the way, in the NBA that got a lot of news this week when Rudy Gobert was tested positive for it on Wednesday, just before his team's game with Oklahoma City. And you may have seen some clips of him on Monday where he was just kind of mocking the fact that we need to be careful about this disease. He was rubbing the microphone, touching the desk, and there were reports even from his teammates being upset about how careless he was in the locker room, getting up in the faces of teammates. You know, never mind, let's not spread germs. He was actively doing it. Now he's since apologized for that because one of his teammates now has it. So he's making fun of, hey, let's quarantine, let's be careful. He's doing that on Monday. He comes down with the virus on Tuesday. The game is canceled Wednesday, and then the NBA suspends the entire season. So what happened in 2009? I forget the name of the player. Was it C.J. Watson? 2009. He's playing for either Cleveland or somebody. He comes down with the swine flu. And how does the NBA respond? Well, these are the NBA guidelines. Look, we've got big crowds that come to these games. Everyone's got to take it upon themselves to be careful. This is from the NBA in 2009. Wash your hands often with soap and water. If soap and water are not available, use an alcohol-based hand rub. Avoid touching your eyes, nose, and mouth. Germs spread this way. Try to avoid close contact with sick people. If you're sick with flu-like illness, the CDC recommends that you stay home. While sick, limit contact with others. So basic quarantine guidelines. But they didn't cancel the whole season. They didn't ban the whole season. They didn't ban basketball. It's amazing how, even when you look at some of the greatest performances in NBA history, Michael Jordan, for example, he had the famous flu game in 1997. Remember that, some of you? Kobe Bryant had one of those. I forget which year that was. But we used to celebrate that sort of thing. Well, he's coming. He's playing with the flu. He's out. He's out in this contact sport. And he has the flu. And the flu, let's be honest, the flu kills people. Now, maybe the risk is slightly less. And we don't even know. We don't even know that. But maybe the ordinary flu is not quite as lethal as coronavirus. But it is lethal. And how, going by the Wuhan standard, let's establish that now and look at this history. By the Wuhan standard, what is Michael Jordan thinking? Playing against the Utah Jazz while he's sick with the flu. It's a different time period we're in. You look at smart media, you look at social media sites, smartphones, and the way things spread, you add to that, you know, politicizing it. It's a toxic mix. This is CBS from, I think, a little bit later in the year. What happened in 2009? There was the outbreak of swine flu, and then the WHO declared a pandemic in June, but the disease basically died out over the summer, the warmer months. There are some who say that that's probably what's going to happen here with the coronavirus. But then it came back with a vengeance in the fall. And the Obama administration at that time was scrambling, trying to come up with a vaccine, trying to distribute flu shots. People, as you'll hear here in a moment, people were waiting in lines for hours and hours. And the way the media treated that subject and the Obama administration, it's astounding to just compare the difference. Here's CBS saying that, again, you've got to find that balance between contain, but yet not panicking. We don't want to panic. This is clip six.
The Homeland Security Secretary was asked what her message is to worried Americans.
We can't just say stop everything.
But that's exactly what Vice President Biden seemed to suggest this morning when he implied that trains and planes should be avoided.
I would tell members of my family, and I have, I wouldn't go anywhere in confined places now.
It prompted this assertion from the mayor of New York.
The bottom line is I feel perfectly safe on the subway.
And a walk back from the White House.
I think the vice president misrepresented what the vice president wanted to say.
Even the transportation secretary came forward to say it is safe to fly, and he urged Americans not to cancel flights unless they suspect they have the flu.
So don't fly if you have the flu, but we're not going to cancel flights. Of course we're not going to ban travel. You might have heard there the one individual that actually said, well, I'm not going to let my family travel. That was Vice President Joe Biden. And then the Obama administration, as you heard there, had to walk it back. Jake Tapper, he's at CNN now. He was in the White House room with the spokesman and said, well, now Vice President Biden is saying there ought to be a travel ban. And then you heard, I think his name was Robert Gibbs, he said that, well, really, he didn't mean what he said. And they laughed out loud. The press corps, they laughed out loud. Are you seriously saying that Vice President Biden said this, but he didn't really mean it? He didn't mean what he said? That's from 2009. There are the Obama officials out there saying, look, go ahead and fly. Go ahead and travel. The Vice President Biden didn't mean what he said. Well, now this week, you've got Biden, even just yesterday, Biden made the statement about, okay, the travel ban, these things that President Trump is doing, they're not helping. He called the travel ban that he put on in January on flights coming in from China, he called that racist. Tom Cotton last night on Fox News, he gave, again, just a simple reminder of Vice President Biden's track record. He comes out yesterday, of course, because, well, the speech of the president the night before, it had mixed reviews. Of course, his enemies criticized the speech. And then here comes Mr. Biden the next day, speaking in front of all the U.S. flags, and the lights are dim, and it's supposed to be very presidential. Because this, again, this is their opportunity to try to take out Donald Trump. So Mr. Biden has the answers. He knows how to fix this problem. And you can look at his track record, because he was the vice president. The last time there was a global pandemic. This is Tom Cotton last night on Fox News talking about Vice President Biden, his ties to China, and so on. Clip two.
But in light of how China has unleashed this plague on the entire world through their dishonesty and their lack of transparency and corruption, it's even more urgent that we examine Joe Biden's decade-long record of being wrong on China. This is not ancient history either. Just last year, Joe Biden said that the Chinese Communist Party is full of good folks and they're not a competitor to the United States. Last month, whenever President Trump shut down travel from China, which is the single most important step our government has taken to arresting the spread of the Chinese coronavirus here, Joe Biden called it xenophobic. Joe Biden cannot be trusted to protect this country from the Chinese Communist Party.
That's Tom Cotton last night on Fox News. Now, again, you backtrack to 2009. WHO declares the swine flu an outbreak or a pandemic. In June of that summer, that year, this is after the U.S. was made aware of this new virus in April. And by the time it was all said and done, I think the pandemic was in place for almost a year. It was about a year later, maybe 10 months later, that the WHO finally lifted it. And by that point, 60 million Americans had been infected with the swine flu. 60 million, 273,000 Americans were hospitalized. And how many deaths? 12,469. According to the CDC, some estimates have it more in the neighborhood of 17 or 18,000. 17, 18,000. Well, let's go with the CDC. 12,469 deaths as a result of the swine flu. Globally, it was like a half million. And so, as I say, it took the Obama administration quite a few months, several months. They were downplaying initially. The NBA downplayed it. They had an NBA player sick with the swine flu. They didn't cancel the season the very next day. And you know what else about this particular virus? The ones who were vulnerable, not elderly people who are already sick over the age of 80, the ones who were especially vulnerable to the swine flu were children. Children. Here's October 2009. This is from ABC, clip four.
What a scene it was this weekend as Americans tried to do the right thing. President Obama decided to declare the epidemic a national emergency of swine flu. And around the country, people were lining up waiting for hours to get vaccinations. But there are only 11 million doses available, far short of the 40 million expected by this time, and the 150 million the government says will eventually be needed for everyone. ABC's Lisa Fletcher has been there where the lines will be forming again.
Around the country, tens of thousands lined up for swine flu vaccines, hoping to get a shot before being shut out.
There's no more. This is the cutoff.
We're being turned away when we're told that they don't have any. My children's health at stake.
We've been in line for 5 hours today.
It's all done.
One of the biggest fronts in the battle, Los Angeles County, where 20,000 doses were given just on Saturday, and it couldn't come fast enough.
We knew it was, like, limited, and we kind of braced ourselves, but still, you're never really prepared to wait 4 hours, you know, in a car.
The LA County Health Department reports 3,000 doctors ordered the medicine and only 400 have received it. In Chicago, seven clinics used every drop they had and ended up turning people away.
If we had more supply, we could give it to more people, but we don't.
In fact, the government said 40 million doses would be ready by now. In reality, it's about one-fourth of that.
I think the problem has been the manufacturers have been overly optimistic, and it's made planning much more difficult.
46 states are reporting H1N1 as widespread, with more than 1,000 deaths and 20,000 hospitalizations. And while an average case is usually no more dangerous than other flu, this strain has its unknowns. 30% of the deaths are in healthy people with no underlying problems.
Quite unlike coronavirus, 30% of the deaths, and there were a lot of them, 12,500, and 30% of the deaths, they were healthy people. No underlying health problems. This was a lethal virus. And what happened? You probably can't even remember that it changed your life in any significant way in 2009. This is 11 years ago when school started back up in the fall of 2009. There, school officials were concerned. We've got to get these shots. As you heard, they didn't have enough. Again, this is how the world deals with it. They put the disease basically in the vaccine. It's crazy. But that's how they supposedly build up our immunity. In fact, as you heard on that report, there were 1,000 deaths by that point. Then they start shooting everybody up with shots. And by the end of it, 12,500 in the United States alone. These vaccines that they try to put together, they're just stabbing in the dark, hoping they'll find something. And in a lot of cases, it makes it worse. That's man's ways. All the solutions that we put forward, but going back to the hype and the coverage and even the administration, they promised 40 million shots, and they only delivered a fourth? And that after months. This is 4 months after the WHO declared it a pandemic. Pretty amazing. Here's more, this time from CBS. This is clip 7.
New York City has seen more new flu cases than anywhere in the country. The city estimates up to 800,000 cases, and today announced flu shots will be available for its 1 million school kids.
If they make it available to us, we know how to distribute it.
Meanwhile, the federal government is launching a prevention effort aimed at kids.
Always sneeze or cough into the bend of your arm.
Like this. Achoo!
Starring Elmo from Sesame Street with some tips.
Happy and healthy on Sesame Street.
With school starting, they want to try everything to reach the most likely victims.
That's the Obama administration. They got Sesame Street's help. And we're told now, he did everything just beautifully, perfectly. Certainly Joe Biden, he knows how to fix this. We'll hear the promises galore over the next several months as the United States prepares for another presidential election. All of these promises. And social media, you've seen it even this week, tweets and things saying that, if only it would have been Hillary Clinton, there'd be no such thing as coronavirus. It certainly wouldn't be hyped the way that it is now. It is, as I say, it's a real contagion. It's a real disease. Italy wouldn't be locking down its nation were it not for the case that it is contagious. And I had an exchange yesterday with Mr. Hilliker, who has a program on Wednesdays and Fridays, Trumpet Hour, just making the point that it is refreshing to see what actually can be done with decisive leadership. Think about if some of the things, some of the actions that governments have taken this week, think about what could happen, what could change for the better. In our society, like I discussed briefly yesterday, if we actually targeted sins, if we actually went after sins and tried to eradicate sin from our society. But in every case, it's always to try to deal with the effect and not the cause. In this case, the cause of sickness and disease, or the cause of spiritual sickness and disease, as I covered yesterday. We've got to try to find the Band-Aid. We've got to try to find the vaccine. We've got to try to find, and we've got to hurry. All of our hope, all of our trust is in government. This next CBS clip talks a bit about how the Obama administration was tackling this pandemic in 2009. Clip 8.
President Barack Obama urgently convened his flu team at the White House today.
I don't want anybody to be alarmed, but I do want everybody to be prepared.
The H1N1 virus is different than most flu strains. Young people are 20 times more likely to get it than people over 65. So the start of school is raising the concern level. The president says the vaccine program is making steady progress.
This program will be completely voluntary, but it will be strongly recommended.
But infectious disease experts aren't so sure. Flu vaccines are in trials right now, but the earliest they could be ready is October. A spike in the H1N1 virus could come sooner.
And it certainly did. It certainly did. Tens of thousands, hundreds of thousands hospitalized. 12,500, according to the CDC, 12,500 killed by this virus. This virus, a virus that especially targeted young people 20 times more likely to get it, as you just heard. Did Broadway cancel its shows? Were there travel bans between Europe and the United States? Did they cancel the season? Certainly the NBA would have canceled it after one of their players tested positive. None of that happened. And as of right now, that particular pandemic, far worse worldwide for coronavirus, fewer than 5,000 deaths. One final clip. This is CBS from October 2009, clip 9.
A chance to get the hard-to-find H1N1 vaccine produced a polite stampede of parents and not-so-happy children in Fairfax, Virginia this morning.
Oh, yeah, it's definitely hard to get. It's the only place you can find it right now.
Whole families skipped Saturday morning cartoons and braved the rain and the line to snap up 12,000 doses of the drug.
No, I don't have a shot, but he has a shot, and I feel a lot better. That's why I waited in a line for 5 hours.
5 hours?
5 hours.
Many clinics, like this one, limited their supply to those most at risk. Babies, young children, and pregnant women. The virus is not so selective. The Centers for Disease Control says H1N1 has spread to 46 states. More than 1,000 Americans have died, and more than 20,000 have been hospitalized. Experts say it will likely spread further. So much like a disaster declaration before a hurricane, the president today declared the swine flu a national emergency. The White House says it's not meant to scare anyone. It simply loosens some bureaucratic red tape to make it easier for hospitals to get what they need should the epidemic get worse.
And so when he declared the national emergency, a full 3-4 months following the pandemic declaration from the WHO, even still, President Obama and his team there, they were doing everything that they could to try to reduce the level of anxiety and worry and fear and panic. They tried to do everything that they could to make sure that American society just continued right on. No restrictions, no bans. So very different compared to today. Why the difference? Well, for one, you've got Trump derangement syndrome. That's certainly part of it. But I think it says a lot, too, about social media and smartphones and the way hysterical reactions can just spin out of control. I'm sure there's other factors as well. The media just continually getting more and more corrupt. The truth, the fact that Satan's cast down, of course he was cast down in 2009 as well. But look at how difficult it is just to get to the truth. The truth has been cast to the ground, thankfully. For those of you listening to this program, we can view these events through the lens of Bible prophecy. Okay, so this is the way that this is receiving coverage today. It's as if 200,000-300,000 Americans have already died. That's how hysterical the reaction has been. But when you step back and look at the significance of this, it's certainly a significant story. There's no getting around that. Look at the impact it's had on the world in just a matter of days. Look at what's happened to the economy, to the stock markets all over the world. Look at how fragile so-called globalization is. And look at the rift, look at the division that we see between the United States and Europe. Do you think Europe likes the fact? There were quite a few stories yesterday. European officials very much upset that Donald Trump's administration, they didn't consult with any European leaders. He just made the decision. And of course, when you think about where these diseases are particularly spreading fast, it's in Europe. So here again, just like the travel ban with China a couple months ago, it looks like the president, if he's going to restrict travel, he chose the right nation, or the right continent, I guess, in this case. France, Ireland, Belgium, Bavaria, Lower Saxony, these are German regions, Portugal, they've all shut down their schools. You know about what's happening in Italy. I mentioned Denmark and Ireland following the course of Italy. This is from the AP. This is from the AP yesterday. It says officials on both sides of the Atlantic say Europe is the new epicenter of the coronavirus pandemic. CDC Director Robert Redfield tells U.S. lawmakers in House hearing that within the world now, over 70% of new cases are linked to Europe. Europe is the new China. So as we discussed earlier this week, the ones really getting pounded by this disease, if you just look at the impact of the disease, it's the king of the south, it's the king of the north now, and of course it was the king of the east, one of the kings of the east, China. And we've already talked about how that could impact the leadership, Vladimir Putin coming to the fore, heading up that conglomerate, kings of the east. Iran's getting pounded by this, even top officials coming down with the virus. And then you have Europe. Europe is the new China, says the AP. It says here, the head of the Danish Health Authority, Søren Brostrøm, says today that the epidemic has gotten a new epicenter, and that's Europe. He tells reporters that if one looks at day-to-day developments, Europe has the greatest growth now, and it's not just Italy, but also a number of other countries in Europe that have had a worrying development. You add Italy together with France, Spain, and Germany, and it is spreading. It says the European Center for Disease said the continent has more than 22,000 cases of the new coronavirus and 943 deaths. 943. How will this impact the formation of those 10 kings? That European Union, as we know, it's to be downsized, and how will it impact leadership in Germany? It's yet another reason to watch world events in Germany, especially, and to see how that this impacts that prophecy in Daniel 8 this story from the Telegraph today, again, just to highlight the significance of these developments from a prophetic standpoint. It says the global response to coronavirus shows that the nation state is back. Look at the nations as they're maneuvering. You've got China threatening to withhold all of these pharmaceutical supplies and drugs. So much of that for the United States, it comes from China. We're so dependent on drugs. China's threatening. China's saying it's the U.S. that caused this. China's trying to, well, they've basically kidnapped journalists that wanted to get the story of this virus out. If there's any place on earth, by the way, where it should just be out of control, and again, we look at China and we don't even know all the details there because it's a communist state and they control, in many ways, they control the information that's distributed. But if they tried to conceal it for 5, 6, 7 weeks, well, you would just think this is spread all over China in particular. Now, they've had the most cases, and I guess the deaths in China, it rises to the level of 3,000 to 4,000 if we're to believe the statistics. In any event, let me come back to this point. I will just say, for those that say, well, there's millions of cases undetected. There was a headline for the UK, 10,000. The official number, it's 500, 600, but you get someone that steps, he rushes up to a microphone and says, no, it's 10,000. Rashida Tlaib says it's 150 million. There's no way of knowing at least that number, but what we do know, at least in the nations that are going to print honest statistics, we know the number of deaths. And we know that in the UK, it's just been a handful. And we know that in the United States, it's been 36, according to the CDC from last night. But you can't say this is 10 times more lethal than the ordinary flu and at the same time say it's millions and millions and millions of cases undetected. If there are millions and millions and millions of cases undetected and it's 10 times more lethal, then why aren't there more casualties? It's one or the other. Either it's really lethal and authorities are doing a decent job to contain it, or it's not that lethal and it is spreading. And then you add to that the paranoia, the sensationalism. But again, let's stick to this last point. I'm about to run out of time. But this is exposing the fact that the nation state is back, and that's building. What does Jesus say in Matthew 24, verse 7? For nation shall rise against nation. That's what Jesus Christ was prophesying, that the nation state would be back in the last days. Nation rising against nation, and we're seeing it. It says here, the Prime Minister of Jamaica is getting worried about Brits flying into his country. Two of them, he said yesterday, have already brought the coronavirus, and he might consider a travel ban. The public reaction to his announcement was one of outrage. Consider a ban? What's to consider? The Brits have the lurgy, so stop them arriving. Put country first. Donald Trump made a similar point, and typically was lambasted for it, but look around. And we see a lot of leaders behaving in the same way. It's not like President Trump is alone. He announced it the other night and said, look, we're going to put America first. If American lives are in danger, then we're going to cut off travel to Europe. He is not alone. It says from Brussels, Guy Verhofstadt reached for the moral high ground by telling Trump to focus on American healthcare and not on a travel ban for Europeans. But how much European solidarity is on display right now? The Italians are facing their worst peacetime crisis, but Angela Merkel has decreed that Germany's supply of medical protective equipment is not for export. Germany's going to look out for its own. says her government stopped shipments of masks to Austria, Hungary, and Switzerland. So much for the sanctity of the single market. Well, that's right. What about globalization? What about these unions? It says Christine Lagarde, now head of the European Central Bank, doesn't even pretend to be willing to help Italians whose government bonds come under pressure. Not her job, she said yesterday. Her remarks sent Italian government interest rates soaring. And the point that he makes at the Telegraph is that when crisis strikes, you are on your own. Where is this leading? It's leading exactly to what Jesus said in Matthew 24, Luke 21, Mark 13. Nation shall rise against nation. Kingdom against kingdom. And there shall be famines and pestilences and earthquakes in different places. And all these, said Christ, all these are just the beginning of sorrows. This article continues, the coronavirus is testing global alliances with revealing results. It turns out that when a pandemic strikes, countries react like people do. They stockpile. That's right. That's human nature. There's a shortage of masks. Those are sold out. Toilet paper, too, for some reason. People fighting in the aisles for toilet paper. Well, there's a hysterical reaction. It's every man for himself. It's the same with nations. It says clinical face masks might not be the most effective tool against the virus, but Ms. Merkel still wants to make sure that Germany has enough of them before she'll allow any to make their way to Vienna. Okay, so you see how it works? This is human nature, and it's building. This is the return to nation states. Every nation for itself. It says some see coronavirus as a drill for how to handle the next pandemic. It's lucky that the last one, swine flu, was so mild. Well, was it really that mild? Look, if you judge the last one by the Wuhan standard, it says COVID-19 is a nastier pandemic, but not an especially deadly one. A virus as contagious as swine flu and as lethal as Spanish flu could pose a bigger risk to a country than war. And that's the thing. As I've stressed this week, whether you say coronavirus is bad or not, or swine flu is especially bad or not, when you look at Revelation 6 and Zechariah 6, it is, in every case, a tiny, tiny little preview of what is prophesied. What happens when you have something as contagious as this one might be, but that's also as deadly as the Spanish flu, as deadly as the one that happened, back in 1918, a medieval-style plague of epic proportions. That's what your Bible prophesies. I just read to you those verses in Matthew 24. All of this, as Jesus said in verse 8, is just the beginning of sorrows. When we come back, we'll conclude today's program with a little bit of feedback that's come in from you, the listener. You're listening to Stephen Fleury, and this is the Trumpet Daily Radio Show. If you'd like to submit feedback, you can email us, td@kpcg.fm. We'll be right back.
This is KPCG-FM, and this is the Trumpet Daily. Are we living in the last days? Some dismiss the notion as fanatical, but world leaders and news analysts are issuing warnings that are becoming more and more dire. Could Bible prophecies about the last days actually be accurate? Our brochure can help guide you through the relevant news and history and help you compare these events to what the Bible says. Are we living in the last days? This brochure is available for free right now at thetrumpet.com. Don't forget to visit our website at thetrumpet.com. Every day, thetrumpet.com will help you understand your world by analyzing today's headlines under the clear light of Bible prophecy. Log on to thetrumpet.com and sign up for our daily Trumpet Brief email and subscribe to The Trumpet magazine. From the Philadelphia Church of God campus in Edstone, England, this is The Trumpet Daily Program with Stephen Flurry.
There have been quite a few other things going on this week that we haven't gotten to. The Russian parliament paving the way for Vladimir Putin to remain in power for 16 more years. They tacked on a nice little 16-year addition to his rule as the Tsar of Russia. He's in for the long haul. He's there forever. Another one here from our Jerusalem office. Gantz reaching out to the Arab parties to try to form a coalition that's able to push Bibi from power. It says here, nevertheless, well, it's not unusual, it says, for politicians to renege on campaign promises, but this particular flip-flop was jaw-dropping, both given how immediate it was and considering the joint list platform, those are the Arab parties, which includes, for example, opposing the Jewish law of return while supporting the Palestinians' right of return. So he campaigned saying he would never do that, but now here he is, breaking that campaign promise, doing anything and everything he can, like we often see from politicians, just anything to get to power, anything to grab hold of power. Doesn't matter what you said or did in the past, you can change your tune on a dime. The ends justify the means. Here in the UK, the Tories have put together this massively bloated budget. This headline here from the Telegraph, the Tories have turned their backs on Thatcherism with the new public sector budget. They just want to spend, spend, spend. It says beyond the promised cut to national insurance contributions, there was virtually nothing in this budget by way of tax cuts. On the contrary, in the round of the budget, or this round, raises an additional $5.5 billion of tax a year. So tax and spend, those are a few of the headlines we haven't been able to get to this week. Some feedback from some of our listeners. It says, nice to hear a voice of sanity in the midst of this coronavirus madness. Another one writes, another fact-filled, faith-filled episode. Your show is like taking a shot of truth adrenaline. Oh, yeah, maybe it's a vaccine. That's going to be the word for the week, I'm sure, in the days ahead. Another interesting program, says one, and another one writes in, I must admit this whole coronavirus story may be turning me into a conspiracy theorist. And then this one here says, thank you, Mr. Flurry, for the Trumpet Daily. I never leave home without it. Another one writes, please give more excerpts from the live lecture. I couldn't watch it. Well, this is from last week, I guess. We did actually play three of those, as I recall. This one comes from Ontario, Canada. I don't think I've read this one before, but it says, we know that the coronavirus and all the plagues on the earth are a correction from God for this world because we don't listen. We were especially shocked when we saw this article today in the news with the title, The Human Race is Not Special, So Why Do We Think We're Immune to Mass Extinction? It's so deeply saddening, because it is a clear attack against God and our incredible human potential. I pray God's kingdom and government will come quickly so that mankind's eyes will be opened. What a headline. The human race, it's not so special. So why do we think we're immune to mass extinction? It's only a matter of time, by the way. Sam mentioned this the other day, before the climate change extremists come forward and say, this is actually good. We need to reduce the human population anyway. We need to ban air travel anyway to save the environment. Not much longer before we hear from that movement. Another one here says, I've asked God for help and he's helped me. I'm changing my ways for the good. I'm finally coming home. And today you talked about asking for God's help and receiving it. And it's coming true for me. Your program is helping. This one from the other day, it says, love your show. I try to catch it daily now after live feed surfing. I stumbled across your stream. Your timing is perfect to listen to when I'm having my morning coffee. So glad that I found this show. Another one here says, listening from the Twin Island Republic of Trinidad and Tobago, I have to admit the information is both inspiring and terrifying to ponder. It's definitely driving me to study the scriptures and the correspondence course. So if you'd like to submit some feedback, you can send any and all comments to td@kpcg.fm. You're listening to Stephen Fleury, and this is the Trumpet Daily Radio Show. We thank you for joining us today, for joining us all through this week, and we'll see you Monday.